bars and there's 6 lines written and you can shoot the 30.
Evermeyer?
Liar. Don't believe a word you said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike. And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Thursday, September 24th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, three football writers looking forward to the land of bourbon and bluegrass. We got Kyle Maestri.
How's it going?
We got Mike DeFerdinando.
What's up, guys?
Who's also looking forward to horse racing, from what I understand. And we got Phil Kegler.
Good afternoon.
All right, and we got a lot to talk about today. Since it's the Kentucky week here, we're going to start off talking about some news that broke this week. Some of the most important headlines that we've seen come out of the football practice and everything this week. Let's start off, sort of put a close on the Tennessee chapter of the season. Obviously, the Lane Kiffin, Urban Meyer drama extended past the game. Just somebody give me an update on that. All the barbs that were traded between the two coaches.
Yeah, I'm not sure how far we want to go back here, but Kiffin earlier in the week had said some more. Well, first it started with Meyer after the game. He called out Kiffin. Ish by saying that he felt the coach didn't play to win during the game in the Swamp. He felt like they were just happy to keep it close, and the reason Meyer didn't open up his offense was because he didn't want to make a mistake to a team that wasn't trying to win anyway and help them win. So Kiffin responded the next day. Somebody asked him if he was scared of swine flu breaking out in his team, and he said, I guess, or whatever his reply was, and he's like, we'll just wait till we have a bad performance, one we're not pleased with, and then we'll just tell you everyone got sick, as Urban Meyer did. So then he also said something about how, Commissioner Slive told them in the offseason, don't take shots at each other, and apparently Urban doesn't need to follow that, something along those lines. Urban was asked about it in practice. He gave a quick no comment, and I guess the commissioner told them both, you know, chill out, act like adults. So,
and they will for now. We'll see how long this extends.
It's very disappointing to me. I came to really enjoy the Kiffin and Meyer back and forth. But I mean, obviously, I say from Sly's perspective, it looks bad publicly.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of national people and radio people have been saying, like, Urban shouldn't, like, stoop down to Kiffin's level in a way. You know, it's like everybody's been saying, and you know, it kind of grew on me, and I kind of agree. It's like, Urban, you have 2 titles. You're going for a 3rd title. Like, why are you sitting here debating Lane Kiffin on anything?
Yeah. Pride.
I mean, I guess, but I mean, it's like, it should have just been like, look, we won, move on to the next game. Like, you didn't win the way you were supposed to, so you don't have anything to say.
That's the thing. That's what I was telling you before. Like, the worst possible thing happened, because I for one, am glad that they're both shutting up now, and they got made to shut up. But, like, normally it's, you know, it's back and forth, it's this and then that, and then, you know, ultimately everyone just goes back to, oh, we'll just settle it on the field. But unfortunately, they played the game and nothing was settled on the field because Florida won, but not, like, it was like an embarrassing win.
Yeah.
So both sides, both simultaneously feel like they won and lost and nothing got settled, even though they already played the game.
I mean, Kiffin really kind of got what he wanted out of all this, didn't he, though? Like, he's got Urban down there in the mud with him rolling around, throwing jabs at each other, so.
Childlike insults going back and forth, like. This ends now, though. Like, we won't have to deal with this till next season, or at least till the off season when the recruiting battle kicks up again.
Yeah, I think you're going to start seeing the recruiting battle. There was already a report on Scout's website that Florida commit Solomon Patton, I believe is his name.
Uh-huh.
Kiffin called him. What, he couldn't make the Tennessee game as an official visit because his high school team was playing on Saturday, which is weird enough as it is. But anyway, apparently Kiffin and one of the other assistant coaches called Patton a couple days after the game and said, tried to get him to come visit Tennessee and said that they would keep it on the down low so that, like, Urban wouldn't start, like, calling Patton or, like, being worried about it. And Patton essentially told Kiffin to go jerk off or something and get out of my life.
Wow.
And then harsh words. Reportedly in,
both of you.
In Patton's... next conversation with UF wide receivers coach Billy Gonzalez. Bill was like, you know, like, next time Kiffin calls, just be like, you know, you're committed to Florida. And then as the story continues, the next time Urban talked to Patton, Urban was like, told Patton that the next time Kiffin called Patton, for Patton to tell Kiffin that Urban says hello. So I think you're going to see, I mean, I don't know how many of these will become public, but I think you're going to see stories like this over and over as the recruiting season goes on.
Can't take it anymore.
This is outrageous. Yeah,
this is awesome.
I love it.
This is awesome.
But I mean,
this is awesome.
Kiffin's all in the news. Like, if you go by the saying, any press is good press, well, you know, he's there.
I mean, we've learned that's not true in some senses.
Well,
so.
I mean, we'll see what the recruiting classes look like. I mean, he went on the field, but, like, nobody – I mean, you could argue that no coach could have won with Tennessee's roster against Florida's roster this year.
And one last thing before we close out the Tennessee thing. Do you guys feel like there's been something of a – sort of a reaction, kind of like a, you know – a reaction back to the bad game, and that everybody sort of, the fans left unhappy with the game and thinking Florida played poorly. Do you feel like fans have sort of overcompensated for that, by sort of taking the negative coverage of the team into, you know, arguing otherwise?
I mean, I think it seems like fans left exactly as they should have left. I mean, like,
but no, then I'm talking afterwards. They tried to recoup, you know, recompensate for that by saying, no, Florida looked great. A win's a win. You don't feel like that at all? Now with all your hate emails?
Fans, I guess. I mean, I think I would have gotten that any year I would have written that. I don't know. I don't know that I feel like they overly went. I just think fans are fans.
Yeah, I think it's just, it had nothing to do with that. That's just how they react to any negative stories anyway.
Ah, okay.
So I think even if they're bad, well, actually, I don't know. Fans are funny because I kind of agree with you if you're going down the road that had they lost and we wrote all this stuff, then nobody would have said anything to us.
Exactly.
They would have been like, yeah, you're right, we suck. Like, fire Urban, you know? But, like, since they won, even though it was, like, they played poorly in a win, which I guess can't happen, then it's like we're not allowed to write anything negative. Even though it wasn't a good game for them, there were a lot of negative things that came out of that game. Somebody commented on my thing. It was like, do you really think this article helps the team? Or do you just have to turn something in that's controversial? Because the only reason I ever write anything is if it helps the team or if it's controversial. Like, not that they were actually, like, not very good, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. The backlash has been sort of weird, but we've also gotten a couple comments like, good job being objective. We appreciate it. Like, I agree that, you know, they didn't look too good. But I don't know. It's just fans are funny.
Yeah. Helping the team thing is outrageous to me. That's unbelievable. It's like
that's my sole purpose.
Yeah, that's all Kyle does.
Well,
here.
And the thing is about last year, it's like there's reason to be worried when Florida doesn't play well in a win. Like we went down this,
right?
You know, like we've covered a team last year.
How you avoid losses?
Yeah,
play well.
Exactly. I mean, last year they don't look good against Tennessee. They don't look good for the first couple games, and then look what happens. They lose to Ole Miss. It's not like it's unheard of that, you know, this isn't going to carry on.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to bring.
And, like, all the coaches and stuff act like anything that happened was just part of the plan. Like, don't worry about it. That's how it was supposed to go down. That's how we drew it up. There's nothing wrong ever. So I think that kind of feeds into it, too. It's like we're calling out the coaches who are saying that everything's fine. But it's like, what does it take for them to be like, oh, we need to fix this or we're going to lose? And Urban, I think, has been the best one about saying, like, yeah, you know, we need to fix stuff or this is going to, you know, we're going to lose later on. Whereas I feel like all the assistant coaches have just been like, everything's cool. Don't worry about it.
Nothing to see here.
Everything's fine.
Move along. Yeah, I think they all realize that they're terrified to admit for some reason that, like, there's a crack in the armor.
They don't want to be the crack in the armor, I think. Like, they don't want their unit to be the crack in the armor. Like, they're on this juggernaut of a team, and they don't want to be the weak link. That's my theory, my new theory.
It's actually a very, very good theory. I subscribe to that now. Thank you for sharing that with us. A couple more news items. Obviously, the swine flu, or whatever the flu is, it's taking hold here at the University of Florida right now, is somewhat affecting the team. You heard last week Jeff Demps, I believe, had it. Phil, give us a list of people who've been said to have, what is it, the flu or flu-like symptoms?
Yeah, we're going to stick with flu-like symptoms, so we don't...
Unconfirmed cases of the flu.
Yeah. Well, we've had up to 9 people. The only real important people are still Jeff Demps, Aaron Hernandez, and Jermaine Cunningham from last week. And then this week, A.J. Jones missed practice Tuesday, I believe. And he's obviously been starting for them. And defensive end Earl Okine's seen some time from here to there. The rest of them are kind of walk-ons or third stringers. But then A.J. Jones seemed to be back or is expected to be back for this weekend. And then Demps, Hernandez, and Cunningham, the updates on that. I mean, I think you'll see Demps and Hernandez, but Cunningham, if I remember correctly, is the one Myers worried about because Cunningham was getting it at, like, Demps and Hernandez were getting over it by last week's game, and Cunningham was getting it at the beginning of last week's game or something. So, I mean, we'll see how many people play with it. They don't play with it. I don't think it'll be some huge debilitating thing for the Gators this weekend.
Do you think these people should be playing with the flu, or do you think it's... Because there's been all that ridiculous reaction,
right?
Like... They're spreading an epidemic to another school.
Yeah, I don't care. Play with it. Like, whatever.
The Purell's everywhere. They're covered in Purell. There's bottles everywhere.
David Purell.
They shower after the game. Like, literally, let's just go play. I don't care. Like, if they're well enough to play, like, I don't think spreading a disease should be a reason whether or not they play or don't play.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Otherwise, injury news, have we heard anything more about Spikes?
Well,
Deontay Thompson.
He's fine. Yeah, Spikes is healed completely. Tendonitis gone in a week.
What?
No.
Easy.
Charlie Strong is like, someone asked him, "What Spikes, you know, how's Spikes doing?" "Oh, he's out there today. You know, was he practicing in full?" "Yep, full practice." "Is he going to get his normal amount of snaps against Kentucky?" "Yep, definitely." So, Spikes, tendonitis, hearing gone in a week.
Anyway, in a more realistic note, probably, I think he'll be limited a little bit. We're going to ask Urban today. I mean, do we, if we want to take on our analyst hats, do we think that they should play him this week?
I'll be shocked if he plays. I don't think there's any way he should play. You don't need him against Kentucky. Why risk further injury?
I said on the last podcast that my Gator guarantee would be that Spikes does not play this weekend because he shouldn't play, and they're probably smart enough not to play him. Like, what do you, at that point, you're just proving a point. It's like, see, I told you Spikes was okay. I'll trot him out there. Like, even if he's okay, he's obviously still hampered by – you can't get over tendonitis in a week. I'm sorry. Yeah. So just keep him out. There's no reason to play him. You'll be fine without him. And get him healed up for some other tougher games.
Yeah, and they're definitely deep enough at linebacker to where they can afford to have him, you know, sit out against Kentucky.
And if you rest him this week, you get, like, 3 weeks of rest, essentially, because you have the bye week next week.
Yeah.
So you don't set him back by trotting him out there against Kentucky. Let him have all this ample time. Take advantage of this, you know, low stretch in the middle of the season where you don't really need him.
Yeah, because then the next game they'll have to play is sort of what everybody is hyping up as their toughest game of the year at LSU.
Right.
So I think it's smart to sit anybody who has an injury concern at all this week. I don't know how everybody
feels
about
that. The other guy's Deontay Thompson, who has a hamstring injury. He didn't play last week. He's been, like, I guess, in and out of practice. They're having him run and stuff, trying to get him back. I would also be kind of surprised if he played, although I think Urban might play him kind of just to prove a point because the receivers were so bad last week. How you guys feel about that?
I would be surprised if he played, but if he's looks like he could, I would play him as opposed to Spikes, just because it's not, you do have something to work on at receiver. Mm-hmm. Like, Brandon Spikes doesn't need the extra week. The receivers might together. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm gonna agree at that point. And but I don't think I'd see Urban play Deontay to make a point, because I think if Deontay's hampered a great deal, then he won't be very successful anyway, which won't prove any point.
Right.
See, I think you'll see a lot of the young receivers anyway this week, so I don't know what he has to
in meaningful snaps or when the game's out of reach.
Both.
If the game's out of reach. Whatever.
Yeah. We keep making assumptions here. Yeah. Florida's actually good.
Yeah. My bad. Yeah. Worst team in college football.
Yeah, as we talked about last time. Yeah. I don't know. I think, like, Amarius Hines, as we talked about, sees a little couple meaningful
boy,
snaps.
Kyle.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what he does. I really hope he plays and plays more than, like, three snaps where he just blocks.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to play him at this point. Like, after what happened last week, you have to at least see what they can do, right?
I agree, Adam. We'll see what actually happens.
All matters what happens in practice.
Hopefully he doesn't pull a Frankie Hammond. You get four snaps, and the only, like, time you're in the action is when Jeff Demps runs up your back. So.
Well, I think Kentucky's actually a really good test for the wide receivers, because Kentucky's not great across the board, but they are really strong in the secondary. Trevard Lindley is, like, an All-American corner, future NFL guy, so it'll be interesting to see how they play against a pretty good secondary.
Does Lindley cover Cooper? Or does he cover Deontay? If Deontay plays, he plays.
Covered Percy last time.
Right, that's my point. Yeah, like, who's their number one, as we always make this joke?
I think you cover.
Sorry, they're all number three.
If Deontay plays, you cover him because he's the fastest. He's the biggest big play potential.
He's the best.
If Deontay's not out there, is it Cooper?
You're not going to put him on David Nelson.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not covering David Nelson at this point. Like, a linebacker covered David Nelson.
That's an interesting point. Having one good corner is almost meaningless against the Gators, because you're just wasting him by putting him against one person. You need, like, that playmaking safety, Eric Berry. Like, he can go play everyone at the same time, because no one guy is going to hurt you.
Maybe Kentucky just puts him on a side and says, you're all average, so I don't really care who he covers.
Yeah.
I think Deontay is who you go with, just because he's physically the toughest matchup.
Yeah. Well, besides Amarius. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The only reason I would see them not putting on Deontay is if they put, I don't know how great necessarily, or who is their number two corner, I'll be honest here. But, like, with Deontay, if you put a number two corner and you're going to give him safety help, then maybe you put Lindley on another guy. I don't know.
I guess Cooper. Yeah. I guess it would be Cooper.
Lindley's going to cover David Nelson and Brandon James at the same time.
Okay.
And he can do it.
I believe it. Yeah.
I mean, never mind. I don't want to make a James height joke there. Anyway.
It's good. We've only made at least 40 of them this season, so it's good. Keep one away from it. All right, let's move on and talk about some other news. This broke, I believe, last week. It's a story about the Jacksonville Jaguars owner, I think it was, saying that he would consider drafting Tim Tebow in April's NFL draft. What do you guys think of this? It's pretty much just a desperate move because the Jaguars can't sell season tickets. They're poor. They're probably going to move to L.A. at some point. Like, they got to get something in there to bring some hype.
The Jags have two options, draft Tim Tebow or move away from Jacksonville. Those are pretty much your options. And the amount of money they would bring in with jersey sales and tickets, and, I mean, Jacksonville is like the Gator country or whatever. So, I mean, it makes economic sense regardless of how good he ends up being.
Yeah, the quote from Wayne Weaver, the Jaguars' owner, is that star power is incredible, and Tebow is an iconic figure. That's very compelling. He clearly is an outstanding football player and would be an asset to any football organization. So, I mean, we don't even know if he's playing quarterback when he goes to the NFL. Clearly, he would have to for the Jaguars just because, you know, if they're going to draft him.
I mean, David Guard's awesome, dude.
Yeah, putting Mike McCall in a horrible situation.
Exactly. The Nice versus ECU star quarterback, it would be a disaster.
Tebow will be back in Nice on the weekend to, like, help coach on the sideline. It'd be horrible.
All right, but related to this topic, we had an email from a listener, Ed Spillane. Very interesting email talking about Tebow as a pro and how that matches up with his college success. I'm just going to read the whole thing right here. It says, I'm not sure if you discussed this topic. Probably have and will not. Sure if there's differing opinions. I think the Tennessee game and Tebow's pro future will have relevance to this question. Is Tebow the greatest college football player of all time? He said he hears this a lot, especially from Florida alums. And while he thinks Tebow is incredible in what he has done, and he may be the greatest leader, and he said he had his John Wayne moment after the Ole Miss loss. I love the term John Wayne moment, by the way. I really like that. He said the Tennessee game, and I think his pro career, will call into question whether he's the greatest. Can you really be the greatest and not a significantly great pro, barring like a career-ending injury? He says he doesn't think so, and that he's been very, very lucky to have Harvin, Murphy, Demps, this year's defense. He's an incredible athlete, a freak in a way. But I think the idea that you can be the greatest college athlete and not a great pro is an interesting topic. So let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, do we think Tebow will be the greatest college football player of all time?
If he wins another title, he will surely be. If not, it's close. It's up for debate.
I think he already is. But in order for it to be like a pretty much no question situation, he's got to win either a title or a Heisman this year. Okay. Both would definitely do it. So I already think he is, and I think that he will cement it this year.
Okay, and does his NFL future have any relevance to this? Is this an Eric Crouch situation where he could be a safety in the NFL and it wouldn't matter on how good he was in college?
I don't care if he's on an NFL roster.
Yeah.
I mean, by definition, being the best college player. I mean, there's an argument to be had. If you're talented, you should cross over, but I don't think for the debate it matters.
Mm. All right, what do you think of his point that Tebow's just been lucky to have guys like Harvin, Murphy, Demps? Obviously, he's a great leader, he's a great athlete and everything. Do you feel like Tebow's been lucky with the talent he's had around him, and that's made him significantly better than guys in the past?
No, because, well, I mean, he obviously has a ton of talent around him every season because he plays in Florida. But in 2007, they didn't have such a good team around him, and he had his best year by far. So he proved, like, okay, if the team's not very good, I can literally do anything it takes to try to carry my team. And he just put up the sickest numbers ever in an attempt to save that team. And they went, you know, 9-3, lost their bowl game, went 9-4. But and then you've seen what he's been able to do with teams that are talented enough to win. He's motivated them, and he's gotten a championship. So I think he's shown both things, that he can carry teams that aren't so good and that he can win with teams that are supposed to win. So, I mean, I don't know what else you can ask out of him. And, yeah, if he never takes a snap in the NFL, it doesn't really make a difference. And for this argument, just purely who's the greatest college player of all time, it's a 4-year finite stretch, and it's pretty easy to grade across the board.
Well, according to Sporting News, he's not even the greatest player of this decade.
Oh.
The Sporting News recently released a list of, I guess, the greatest athletes of all time of this decade in every sport. So Tebow was not the greatest college football player of this decade. Matt Leinart of USC.
That was voted on by readers?
I believe
readers.
It was a combination of readers and their kind of panel. Because the readers had Tebow as like a 79% favorite over Matt Leinart, but Matt Leinart still won.
Oh, wow. So Sporting News like reversed it.
Yeah.
Holy.
So I guess
they
proving you
one
don't
vote on the panel.
That's what I would assume. Yeah, it works like that. What do we think of that? I mean, I think that's kind of outrageous at this point.
I guess you don't have to be a great pro to be the greatest player of all time after all.
You can be Kurt Warner's backup and be fine. I mean, Phil, what do you think of this? This is
I mean, I just think it's really weird that we're voting on best of the decade and the decade hasn't ended.
Yeah. I agree with Phil completely on that. But at the same time, like, Leinart's Leinart more falls into what Ed was talking about than Tebow does, where he always had teams that were capable of winning a national championship every single year that he started, and he didn't always get it done with those teams.
Yep.
So I as a quarterback, you know, your job is to really, you know, lead your team to victory. That's like pretty much your primary job. And there's a big difference between your team leading you to victory as a quarterback and the other way around, but I mean, Tebow's been the guy, and I think Leinart had a couple slip-ups along the way that Tebow didn't have.
I would also argue that Reggie Bush was the better player on those teams anyway.
Yeah. I think Reggie Bush is a much better player on those teams.
I would certainly agree. I think that Reggie Bush is probably the better argument against Tebow for the greatest, you know, the college player this decade. I think it's Tebow either way.
Right.
But I think if you're going to throw somebody out there, it'd have to be Reggie Bush. And then in that same poll, Florida did come out with one guy on top. It was Urban Meyer was named, like, the best college football coach of this decade. Over Pete Carroll, I would assume, would have to be the other strong candidate in that category.
This I have a slight rant on and slight, like, revisionist history. Not necessarily, Pete Carroll gets hated on, and he's probably rightfully so, because they always lose to teams that they shouldn't lose to out of USC. Happens every year. It's, like, ridiculous, because when a game's called the trap game, like, 8 months in advance and then still happens, that's literally absurd.
Right.
Like, it's funny when it's like, oh, that could be a trap game, and then it happens, but, like, Washington was like a trendy pick, like multiple national writers picked it, and then it still happened. Right. They lost on the road after Ohio State last year. It happened again this year. Just so many issues with that. But when you look at the stats, Pete Carroll has won two national championships, just like Meyer. He's won more of his games overall, a slight edge. Pete Carroll's, if you look at Pete Carroll at USC versus Urban Meyer at Florida, I'm not going to totally hamper him because of his time at Utah. But at their best programs, Pete Carroll's won just under 85% of his game. Urban's won 83% of his games at Florida.
So it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's close. But then you look at it, Pete Carroll's won 7 Pac-10 titles. Obviously, that's weaker than the SEC. But Urban has 2 SEC titles so far, could get a third, get a couple Mountain West titles, I'm sure. But that's obviously lesser than the Pac-10.
So you feel strongly that it should have been Carroll?
Yes. And also strongly that Urban was benefited by the fact that he's done more late than early.
All right, here's why Pete Carroll's a better coach. Because when Pete Carroll took over USC, USC was horrible. USC hadn't been to a bowl game in several years. They were mediocre at best. They were like a doormat of the Pac-10. Urban Meyer took over a floor team that, although it wasn't great, was like pretty good. They had Chris Leak. The cover wasn't bare. Pete Carroll rebuilt the USC program.
All right. USC has been a juggernaut for years and years and years going back. They hit a downslide for like 2 years, I believe it was, where they weren't good, and then Pete Carroll took over. So you're right about that. But Urban Meyer's shown the ability to win with 3 different programs, which pretty much kicks your argument in the balls. Like, you're like, oh, he just took over a talented Florida team, and that's why he's been good. No, he was very good with Bowling Green, who we all know the rich history of Bowling Green for his first 2 years. Then he went to Utah, who, again, what are you going to do with Utah? And he goes undefeated and wins a BCS game at Utah. That's one of the most impressive things to me, out of all the things we're talking about, is that he's shown his coaching ability by going from program to program to program. He wasn't just the beneficiary of a good situation in one spot where Pete Carroll gets to bring in all the best recruits at USC and beat up on a crappy Pac-10 every year and go to the Rose Bowl every single year, no matter what they do. And he hasn't lost to teams he shouldn't lose to.
It wasn't like that at USC when he got there. He built that at USC.
No, he didn't build that.
No, okay, it was there, but then it went away.
Okay.
It was there, and then it went away, and he had to rebuild that program. It wasn't like they were just this juggernaut that he inherited.
It's a Tennessee situation, dude. It's a Phil Fulmer 5-7 at Tennessee situation. Tennessee's a really good program. You wouldn't say Lane Kiffin just went in there with, like, oh, things. There was no chance he could win at Tennessee. It was on the downswing. They just had a couple bad years.
I mean, people even made that argument about Florida, like the Ron Zook era is back at some dark time. And I think, you know, Urban building that back. And I think it's the success he had at Utah that really strengthens his argument than anything. I mean, you can make the argument for him and his success at Florida versus Carroll's success at USC, then you add in Utah.
The SEC's way harder of a conference, harder. And he's won two championships against really good competition. Whereas Pete Carroll drops a game every year he shouldn't that takes him out of the national championship game.
Exactly. The argument about Utah is a good argument and a really fair point. But I just want to point out that the Fiesta Bowl they won was against a very bad Pitt team that shouldn't even have been there if West Virginia doesn't lose like the week before that.
But it happened. And, you know, I mean, you can't. You want to talk revisionist history, you can't go back and change that. So
I'm just throwing it out there.
All right.
Just random stat. USC was 37-35 the 5 years before Pete Carroll took over. Thrown out some numbers.
Okay, but I mean, they had a couple really bad years that would have skewed that also right beforehand.
Likely.
Yeah, I just think you have to look at the number of accomplishments, like an undefeated team with Utah.
You guys agree USC is one of the most storied programs in college football history, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Because
I'm not like I wasn't helping the argument that he built them from the ground, but I'm saying that it was like a downward coming up, right. Like Urban from Zook kind of thing.
Yeah. Fine. Yeah, that's fine. He did a good job, but at the same time, it's not like USC was going to be down forever, and like it was all on Pete Carroll to just come in there and save that thing, like. USC is going to be up eventually, even if they had a rough couple-year stretch there.
Yeah. All right, and then the last news item here we got is something Phil brought to my attention, that the Florida-Georgia game is going to remain in Jacksonville until, I believe, 2016. That's Phil, you want correct. To talk a little bit about that?
The Georgia Athletic Board approved a six-year contract. The game's contract in Jacksonville was set to expire after the 2010 season. And there was some talk about whether or not the game would go on a rotation, possible other side. Like, Jacksonville was always going to be involved, but there was talk about moving it in for some years. Athens was mentioned, like, going to campus sites was mentioned. Also, Atlanta was mentioned. Basically, it was just because Georgia and Mark Richt kind of had a problem with it always being in the state of Florida, and the fact that I think it may be literally closer to Gainesville. I don't know the exact mileage.
It's closer.
Okay.
Not by a whole lot, but it's closer.
Okay, sure. And so there was talk about they wanted to move it, but then, you know, sense went out and it's staying in Jacksonville, and so six more years through 2016.
A couple factors cited by the committee, I guess, that made this decision. They said the economic impact the game has on southeastern Georgia, where many Bulldogs fans stay for the weekend, and the chance to boost Georgia's recruiting efforts in the state of Florida, one of the country's most fertile recruiting areas. That's according to the Associated Press. I wouldn't actually use the word fertile to describe recruiting. Just throwing that out there.
I mean, that's like revisionist history on Georgia's behalf. Now they're like covering up and saying why, oh, it's so great to have it in Jacksonville after like 8 months of saying, oh, we really want to move it.
Yeah. Like, this is the plan this is the plan all along. This is what we really wanted.
Yeah, they don't want to hate on Jacksonville, obviously. They do recruit there. And I think McCall told me once that like Jacksonville's Bulldog Club, like the Booster Club, is like really big. It's a big hotbed of Georgia fans.
Yeah.
One reason I would not have changed this, I didn't realize this, it's been played in Jacksonville every year since 1933, for a two-year hiatus in 94 and 95.
75
Why bother
years?
Changing it at that point? Like, this is tradition. This is history.
Right. See, that's the thing. All right. I actually wanted it changed to a home-and-home just from, a atmosphere point of view. Like, I really wanted it to be, like, you get to go into the other team's stadium. And I think I would have added something to the rivalry. But I didn't want to change for the reasons that it would have been changed, which is pretty much just Georgia's whining. Yeah. Like, the game's been there for 75 years, and it hasn't always been Florida beating the crap out of Georgia. There were stretches when Georgia beat the crap out of Florida.
Yep.
So it's pretty much, they've just been losing now, so they're upset about it, obviously. If they were winning, there would be no problem with the four-hour drive or the super long drive all the way down to Jacksonville.
The interesting, like, concession that came out of whatever negotiations went down is apparently the Jacksonville Athletic Commission or that type of organization is paying for three charter planes for Georgia for the athletics, like the players and the fans. It's really funny because a representative from Georgia made the quote that Georgia's travel time will be less than Florida's now, because I'm pretty sure Florida buses over.
It's good use of dollars in these tough economic times. Yeah. We don't want to make those football players drive 4 hours in luxury buses.
The cool part about the Florida-Georgia game is that it's a neutral site game. I mean, that's what makes it different than all the other games. If it was at home and home, it'd be cool for the campuses, but it kind of loses some of that, I think. It becomes just another SEC game. This just kind of sets it apart. It's like Texas, Oklahoma, or, you know, whatever. This is what makes it stand out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the tradition of it's cool, and the fact that it sets the game apart sort of from everything else. It's something both fans can look forward to. It's not something, you know, Florida fans have to make the drive to Georgia or whatever. Everybody goes halfway, especially if they're getting flown there in 30 minutes or whatever, those Georgia fans and their chartered flights or whatever it may be now. All right, and then let's do a little bit of a Kentucky preview here. We don't have a whole great wealth of information to bring you about this matchup, but Phil, you got some stats and some analysis to bring to the table here, so go ahead.
Yeah, there's two, I would say the two best areas of Kentucky's game, and neither of these are going to win them the game on Saturday, but the defensive secondary and their special teams. So we can go ahead and just, I'm at the special teams, I'll just say stats, and you guys may or may not have anything to say. the Wildcats boast one of the best kickoff return units in the nation. Running back Derek Locke apparently last week had a 100-yard touchdown return against Louisville. And Meyer all week has been praising, you know, he praises every opponent, but I think it's a little bit legitimate here. They do seem to be pretty good. Obviously, they haven't played anyone great yet, but it'll be interesting to see how Florida's cover unit, because it has struggled at times and gave up some decently big returns. Anybody got anything to say about this?
Good point, Phil.
All right, thank you. Anyway, the bigger point that somebody will probably come in on is, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, the secondary is really good. Trevard Lindley, the cornerback, as we mentioned, really good. All SEC pick last year. He ranks second in the nation in passes defended. Here's a little random stat for you. So how do we think U.S. passing attack will fare against Kentucky's secondary?
Well, very well.
Very well.
Really?
I think they'll make a point of throwing the ball this week to kind of silence a little bit of the critics. So
whatever it takes to win is the motto. So
period.
I think they're just going to run the ball a ton. Because, like, I think Kentucky's going to do the – I mean, if they're smart, which, you know, we'll go ahead and say in the SEC coaches are smart, I think they're going to sit back in zone. I think exactly what Tennessee did, Kentucky's going to do. Now, I think Florida will have hopefully a better game plan since they just saw it destroy them a week ago. And if Deontay Thompson comes back, that could help a lot. But I see Florida, I mean, they average, the three running backs all average over 7 yards a carry. Get them the ball more.
You can't get the ball ahead of Tebow's hands, though. I don't know. I think that...
Just call runs, don't call options.
I think that you're going to see a couple big plays this week, at least, maybe like one through the passing game, maybe multiple through the running game. Just, I think Tennessee, that was the best thing they did, is they made Florida work for all their points. There were no easy – there were no 70-yard touchdown runs. There were no 50-yard passes. They had to work the ball down the field, and I think that's hard to do against this team. So I think they make a couple big plays that lead to scores. But, yeah, I think I would run the ball a lot if I were Florida, and, you know, with actual running backs, not like Tebow left, Tebow right, Tebow center. So,
yeah, I think I've seen the argument made this week so far that Kentucky, position by position, Kentucky's secondary is better than Tennessee's. The difference is that obviously Tennessee has Eric Berry, who is better than the entire Kentucky secondary combined.
Right, right.
But position by position, this could be a tougher matchup for Florida than Tennessee was, even.
I mean, I don't, unless Omarius Hines goes off, I have no reason to believe that Riley Cooper, David Nelson, and Brandon James are like productive unit at wide receiver. Deontay is still out. There's no reason for me to think they're going to torch Kentucky in the passing game.
I think if Hernandez is healthier than he was last week, he could have a pretty big game.
Yeah,
this week.
Agreed. So he's functional.
If I'm Kentucky though, I would not let Aaron Hernandez beat me in the passing game. If Deontay doesn't play, definitely it's just whatever you have to do. I'm no defensive mastermind, but just Aaron Hernandez is not going to beat me. And then see what happens. I mean, the running game will beat them anyway, but...
See, I think you're going to get big plays in the passing game, but not necessarily from wide receivers. I think you're going to get lots of little screen passes to Dents and the running backs. They're going to go for big yards. So Tebow's going to end up with, like, a couple hundred yards passing, but it might not be in the way everyone thinks it will be.
All right. Well, that's interesting. I think that's a good option for them to go to something like that, actually. But we'll see if they do that, because they haven't always.
I want to see more of the two running back package out of Florida. I think there's more to be done there with Rainey and Demps. I really mean, I guess you could do it with Moody in one of them, but that'd be kind of weird.
Because
I think
to get
like
on the field for that.
Yeah, well, that's
but he's not lining up in the slot.
Yeah, I don't know. Either like with one of them blocking, or like I don't know if you like flared both out the sides. I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking in my crazy NCAA mind, you have like checkdowns on either side. I don't know.
Do you think Kentucky does follow Monty Kiffin's lead and sort of runs that zone, sort of sit back, make Florida beat you in the, you know, short passes and everything? Do you think Rich Brooks and staff smart enough to do that?
You got to have the personnel to do that, though, too, because you have to have guys who are fast enough and intelligent enough to cover the whole field in zones instead of just following a guy around. So, I don't know. It sounds like they have personnel that's good enough to do that, though. So, yeah, you should try to do that if you feel that you can, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that they have to at least try it. It's like if you saw something that works against them, you can't not run it. But, I mean, I think they'll game plan for having an alternative because I'm sure – Florida all week has probably been like, oh, what are we going to do against zone defense? So they have to have some kind of mechanism to go against that.
All right, that's pretty much all we got on the analysis. Let's make some score predictions
here. I got one more fact here.
Sorry, Phil's got more knowledge to drop.
Rich Brooks at Kentucky against number one teams is 1-0. Strapping that in.
Uh-oh.
Who did they beat?
They beat LSU in 2007.
That's right.
Triple overtime.
That's right. That was a great game, yeah.
That was... The same week Florida played Georgia? I remember watching that on TV, like on a TV, like at a stadium, and I feel like it was there.
I know, yeah. One of LSU's losses were right after Thanksgiving, but since this loss was when they were still number one, it must have been the first one. So it could have been that. This was Andre Woodson then, still, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. But what's Florida's current like win streak against Kentucky to offset that?
22 in a row.
22 in a row. Yeah.
Okay.
Does it end this week, Kyle?
Nope.
Score prediction. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Don't steal mine.
I don't know what to do. I was ashamed after last week's performance.
We've all been publicly shamed by what we did last week. So.
All right. I'm going to go.
Don't do that again.
Don't worry. I will. I'll do my best to do it right now.
Stella will embarrass us next week again.
42-6.
This is a joke. This is an unbelievable joke, although I didn't say it out loud. But
so then obviously not my fault.
You didn't know what Phil was thinking, Kyle? Come on. All right, D first score prediction. Right.
I think a little bit lower than that. I think the Kentucky secondary plays pretty well.
Eric comes out and plays Kentucky.
That'd be awesome.
31-14.
Wow.
I don't think it matters how good their secondary is if Florida's smart enough to just run the ball some more. I want Jeff Debs, Chris Rainey, Emmanuel Moody each to have 10 carries each. Just hand the ball off, Tebow. I'll put John Brantley in there and have him hand the ball off. I got 45-6.
I thought you were going to say my score.
I was going to get a Sturgis field goal in there.
Nice. Yeah. I'm going to say 49-10. I like
Randall
Cobb.
Another touchdown, huh?
Yeah. Right. I like Randall Cobb to get a touchdown.
All right.
That'll help my fantasy team.
Exactly. He's on my fantasy team. That's one thing we didn't talk about, Kentucky. I really like Randall Cobb, but I think Florida's defense completely shuts him down.
Right. I don't know how many playmakers they have outside of Randall Cobb, so that's always scary.
Zero?
I don't know. Yeah, like...
Supposedly Harline's not that bad. Their quarterback. Oh, okay. I mean, he's not great, but he's like not a Jonathan Crompton, so...
Yeah. He's competent.
Yeah.
All right, here's the absolute question that will point out that I don't have enough Kentucky knowledge with, you know, a couple days till the game. Are they more of a passing team or a running team?
They're more of a Randall Cobb team, I would argue.
Can anyone answer that?
No, they're balanced. We'll call them balanced. That's what I meant. They're balanced, so I don't know.
The balanced Kentucky attack.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, Florida's run defense up the middle a little bit weak. I don't know if Kentucky's can pound the ball up the middle. I mean, we've talked about the defensive tackles being a little weak for Florida. I don't think they can run to the outside, and they certainly can't pass on Florida, so...
Yeah, I mean...
No one can pass on Florida.
Yeah, exactly. It was so frustrating last week. Just put eight people in the box. I don't understand. Janoris Jenkins can cover anyone. You keep telling... You say they're good. We know they're good. So just have them play one-on-one. This is getting really annoying.
I totally agree with that. Just get as much run support in the box as you can. Why is this hard?
Make them beat you.
All right. Well, that's out of the way. We're going to move on to a segment we did not do Monday. We're going to try to do it on Mondays, but we had a lot to talk about early in the week, obviously, after Tennessee. It's the Gators in the NFL after the second week of the NFL season went by. I didn't know if they were going to put out this press release now that they didn't have a point to prove to Lane Kiffin about the receivers, so I had to like dig for it a little bit, but I did find it. So I'm going to be reading pretty much straight from that. Apparently 30 former Gators in the NFL, a couple making headlines. Andre Davis from the Denver Broncos, tied for 7th in the NFL, 19 tackles through the first two weeks. Mike Peterson, who we talked about last week, tied for 23rd with 16 tackles. Two good linebackers. Florida, historically, in the last couple of years, has very good linebackers. So, two guys in the NFL proving it. But also...
I believe Brandon Siler had a tackle this week.
I think he's on here. Let's look
at
that.
With these
recorded
days?
One tackle for the Chargers. Correct.
Siler. Chargers still?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Percy Harvin for the Minnesota Vikings is tied for the lead among rookies with 8 receptions. The only rookie wideout with 2 receiving touchdowns. Got another from our boy Brett Favre. Harvin also ranks 4th among all players in kick return average. So he's displaying a little bit of versatility for the Vikings. And Lewis Murphy, after that ridiculous first week, came back down to earth a little bit. Let's see what he did.
Picked him up in every fantasy league.
He had 2 catches for 26 yards in Oakland's 13-10 win over Kansas City in arguably the worst game of the week in the NFL.
Jamarcus Russell's terrible. Like, I didn't think he was good when he was at LSU. I didn't think he would be good. And he's worse than I thought.
Yeah.
He has no accuracy. Was he 7 for 24, I think, in this last
game?
Yeah,
he's terrible.
I think he's completing 35% of his passes on the year. That's unbelievable.
He can throw it 80 yards on his knee.
On his knee, of course, again.
That's so useful on Sundays.
That's an invaluable talent in the NFL.
In our health and fitness writing class, we had the basketball strength and conditioning coach come in and talk to us, Matt Herring, and he's all about, like, functional training, which is just, like, everything you do needs to have a function. So, like, he was talking about how, like, they don't do bicep curls because it has no function for basketball except it makes you look bigger. Like, you look good in your uniform if
that's
you
why
do
I
bicep
do
curls. Right, exactly. That's why we all do it. But it just reminds me of the Jamarcus Russell thing. Like, there's no functionality to being able to throw the ball 80 yards on your, like, from your butt, you know? Like, that just doesn't translate to anything. It's okay, you have a big arm, but he's just horrible. Like, watching Jamarcus Russell is painful.
Yeah. All right, a couple other guys. Alex Brown, defensive end at Chicago, currently holds the UF sack record for a single season, I believe.
Yes.
That Carlos Dunlap is not going to break. Nice job calling that one, guys.
Dunlap is targeting that.
All right.
Did we say he would?
Somebody did, I believe,
probably
on this show.
If it's wrong, I said it.
I think I said he'd have double-digit sacks. I don't know if I said he'd break it.
Okay. All right, but Alex Brown.
I might have. I don't know.
Started, had four tackles for loss, two sacks for a loss of 18 yards, and two QB hurries. The Bears defense, another guy we talked about last week, surprisingly doing pretty well in the NFL. Didn't expect to hear a lot out of him. Andre Caldwell, receiver for the Bengals, caught two passes for 16 yards. Not a great week for him receiving after last week. Also returning kickoffs like Percy Harvin, three returns for 67 yards, and the Bengals won. I guess that's all that matters. You play to win the game.
Upset. They ended me in my survival pool, unfortunately.
Sorry, Phil.
Yeah. Once week two. Once that's all I lasted.
Do not take advice from Phil when it comes to predictions, I guess, is what we've learned. I
mean, after 0-9, the picks gone last week, you absolutely should never take advice.
That's true. One more receiver making headlines. Jabbar Gaffney started for the Denver Broncos, led the team with 82 receiving yards on three catches, and the Broncos win over the Cleveland Browns. Nice game for him, I guess. He's doing pretty well for himself with the Broncos. Reggie Nelson, safety for the Jaguars, and who we named our prestigious weekly award after. He started, had six tackles for the Jaguars. He's always in the box score.
He's always great.
He's starting now there, huh?
Yeah.
He's been starting.
Shows how much I follow Jaguars.
Yeah. Another guy, Lito Shepherd, also a former... former secondary guy for Florida. Yeah. Started two tackles, one pass deflection, and the Jets win over New England, shutting down Tom Brady. Right, Kyle?
Yep.
Nothing else to say. Yeah, he has him on his fantasy team. I have a lot to say, but I'm not going to.
I have Dallas Clark also in our league.
That's true. And Fred Taylor, running back for New England, led the Patriots with 46 rushing yards on eight attempts. 46 yards. He led the Patriots.
Forever young, Fred Taylor.
Forever young. There's a couple other guys I'd recommend going to GatorZone.com if you want to get the full report, including a bunch of DNPs. And Billy Latsko, San Diego Chargers, DNP, did not play.
Well, Billy Gonzalez wished Latsko was lining up a wide receiver this week, so...
There you go. He's not lining up at a receiver or anything for the Chargers in the NFL. So let's move on. Let's round this show out with our Gator guarantees. We're going to make a prediction about something that will happen. I'll assume we're all going with the Kentucky game this weekend. Let's start with Kyle.
Okay. I guarantee that Brandon Spikes will not play, as I've said the last two shows. They're going to hold him out. No reason to risk him, risk further injury. Tendonitis doesn't heal in a week. He's not going to play against Kentucky.
I think Urban Meyer, Tim Tebow want to make a point of getting back to the passing game this week. So I think Tim Tebow, three passing touchdowns this week against Kentucky.
Wow.
To who?
Could be
on the spot. No, it couldn't be anyone. All right,
you won't be held for this. Because
it's not like this is your guarantee. Yeah. I just want to know what you think.
All right, I think Cooper gets one. I think if Deontay plays, he gets one. I think Hernandez gets one.
All right. Good. All viable options.
I think Tebow gets three passing touchdowns over the next three games. But,
Want to bet?
I got a double dose of Gator guarantees here.
Two chances to be wrong.
Sadly, not making the trip to Lexington. I'm saying that...
You whispered that. You don't have that heard of the podcast.
I'm sorry. I'm not making the trip to Lexington.
Thanks, Phil.
Anyway, Kentucky return man Derek Locke will return a kickoff for a touchdown, which does not factor into what I just guaranteed the score to be, so I don't know.
Good job, Bill.
They're going to miss the extra point, 45-6.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah, what else could
and, it be? And I feel better about this one, so double down on this if you're betting Vegas. Florida's Florida will not have an interception this week, ending a 15-game streak longest in the nation.
Wow.
I guarantee they will.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so that's two. Phil, 0 for 2. Go ahead and write that down in the I'm sure people keep score of this. People keep track of how we do.
Right.
Phil's going to be wrong on both of these. I'm going to put my neck out there. I'm going to say Omarius Hines will have more receiving touchdowns than David Nelson and Brandon James combined. One to zero.
One will do it. If he can get the answer one time, he'll do it.
1-0. I think Omarius Hines sees some time lined up at wide out, and I think he'll grab a touchdown. But I also like the guys Defer said to... All right,
let's go three guarantees. I guarantee that Omarius Hines has less than 25 yards receiving.
Okay, he'll get a touchdown. I don't care, Phil. All right, that wraps it up for this show. Check back Monday, I guess. We'll have the wrap-up podcast from the Kentucky game. Also, check us out on the litany of social network sites. You can find us on now Twitter at twitter.com/alligatorsports. Our new Facebook group. I don't actually know the address for that. Just search Alligator Sports or Alligator Sports Podcast on Facebook, and you can find us there. leave some reviews on iTunes and everything. We got 4 reviews on iTunes now.
Yeah, the reviews on iTunes are pouring in.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep that going for us. We appreciate everything we get, and thanks for listening.